Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Once more, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee present 60 minutes of entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood, with Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Douglas MacPhail, Betty James, Ruth Hussey, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and here's our host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Ted. I'd like to remind you our guest of honor is Frank Morgan's illustrious brother, Ralph Morgan. We also hope to confound Frank before the evening's over. Meredith Wilson starts us off with Love is Sweeping the Country.
That your arrangement was very lovely?
Pray do.
Very pretty indeed, if I'm not being too flattering.
Pray be.
Okay, Meredith. Ladies and gentlemen, we continue with...
Excuse me, Bob.
Hello, Ralph Morgan. Well, Ralph, it's certainly a pleasure to have you here, and I see you're right on time, too.
Well, I'm afraid I can't take credit for that, Bob. Because, as a matter of fact, I'm not precisely on time. I was to have been here punctually at 6 o'clock, and it's now 3 minutes past the hour, if my watch is correct.
Uh-huh.
I had it checked at my jeweler last week, so I suppose it's keeping fairly good time.
Yes, well, that really doesn't matter
the
very much.
The reason I was detained, Bob, was that I was coming down on the bus. I generally take the number 4 bus, the red one, you know? I'm acquainted with most of the conductors.
Yes, well, I was thinking...
But today there happened to be a new man driving, and I wanted to be sure that I'd get off at my corner, so I rang the signal bell 2 full blocks before my destination.
Mm-hmm.
And the only trouble was that in my hurry to get off, I didn't realize until the bus was pulling away that I'd left my umbrella under my seat.
Oh, well, that's too bad, Ralph.
Well, I did try to attract Bob. I did. I tried to attract the driver's attention, but in the press of traffic, he didn't notice me. I couldn't run after it because the lights were against me.
Oh.
And, Bob, I do try to be a good citizen about obeying the local ordinances.
Oh, sure. Well,
you can't be too careful in a city of this size. You can't. I remember once when I was in Chicago, I was trying to cross Michigan Boulevard, and Bob, I had a very interesting experience.
And Ralph, I want you to tell me about it sometime. But right now, I want you to meet the other people on the program. This is Meredith Wilson, Ralph Morgan.
Oh, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Morgan, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm feeling fairly fit in general. I stopped in to see my doctor.
Yes,
yes. I generally go in for a checking over once a month, you know.
Well, that's fine. Now,
Dr. Jackson was quite encouraging today. Mm-hmm. Says my blood pressure is going down and it's normal now. And, of course, I've had the protein diet for some time.
Oh.
Yes, and no red meats either and very little sweets. Yes, and one cigar a day.
Oh,
quite a difficult regimen at first, but I've got used to it. In fact,
Ralph,
I could go...
I'm awfully sorry, but
yes, Bob.
We're trying to put on a program here.
Excuse me, Bob. Mr. Morgan, did you ever try the 10-day diet?
I guess I'll have time for a smoke on that one.
Pray do. Now, Mr. Wilson,
yes.
I tried the 10-day diet in 1934, and I found it had some very interesting effects, really.
Yes?
Yes, for instance, the number of calories in the average meal.
Oh, Ralph, please, this is all very interesting, but there's one thing I've got to get straight before we go on with the program. You're Frank Morgan's brother, aren't you?
Well...
I'm telling you, not asking you.
Well, of course I'm Frank's brother. Is there anything you'd like to know about him?
Well, just this. Now, you, Ralph, seem a very careful person. Why do you suppose your brother Frank tells such big lies?
Well, what makes you think Frank is inclined to draw the long bow?
Listen, Ralph, every Thursday he comes here and makes up such tremendous lies that people are complaining.
Well, that's strange. I never heard about
it. Well, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, he claimed he'd been a surgeon for 30 years. What about that?
Well...
Now, please, Ralph, give me a plain yes or no. Well, try to hold it to about 2,000 words.
I'm a man of very few words, Bob. I'll answer your question quite briefly. I don't know.
You don't know whether your own brother spent 30 years of his life as a surgeon?
Well...
You mean you can't be sure?
Exactly. You see, I haven't been in constant contact with Frank.
Oh, sure. He might have done it while you weren't looking. All right, let's admit Frank was a surgeon for 30 years. Now, did you ever hear that he was director of the Russian Ballet for 25 years?
Was he?
Was he?
Bob, I hesitated to say it's untrue because I'd hate to hang a man on circumstantial evidence.
Well, I'll prove it to you. You name just one period in his career where you know what he was doing.
Well, from 1923 to 1927, I shared a penthouse with him in New York.
And you were with him constantly?
Every day, every night.
1923, 1927, that's all I need to know. Now, listen, Ralph, you go disguise yourself as an Oriental potentate or something. And when Frank comes out here, I'll tip you off. Is that clear?
Well, Bob, I could put on a beard and turban.
Yeah,
but that
well,
might not be as good as a burnous in
no.
a fez. On the other hand, to capture the true Oriental spirit...
Well, Ralph, it really doesn't matter what you wear. I'll start lying and you listen. He'll get him lying. Go on. I'll see you later.
You know,
go get
Bob,
ready.
I think if I wore a long beard with a short
sash...
Yeah,
that's fine. That's
maybe
good.
A long sash with a long beard.
That'll
know.
Be fine.
Well, I'll think it over very fast.
Doug McPhail now sings the number one ballad, All Ashore.
Somewhere on a shore.
Annie Bryce is that terrible tot, Baby Snooks. Tonight, all is quiet in the house. Everybody is asleep. That is, everybody except Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford. Poor Daddy finds it difficult to rest comfortably on account of somebody snoring. Listen.
Who's snoring like that? Good heavens, that's Snooks. I can't sleep with that racket. I'm going to turn her over. Boy, that kid snores like a truck driver. Snooks, turn over. Snooks.
Huh? Who is it?
It's Daddy.
Hello, Daddy.
I'm sorry I had to wake you. Go back to sleep.
You woke me up.
You were snoring.
I wasn't snoring, Daddy.
Oh, no, you were snoring loud enough to wake the dead.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were. I heard you.
I was dreaming about a dog, and you heard the dog growling.
Go to sleep.
Wasn't it a funny dream, Daddy?
Now, how do I know?
You was in it.
Okay, start dreaming again. I'm going to try to get some sleep myself. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
What is it?
My throat hurts.
Oh, what's the matter with it?
I was selling papers today.
Selling papers? Where did you get the papers to sell?
I bought them for 3 cents.
Well, how much did you sell them for?
3 cents.
Well, you couldn't make any money that way.
I know it, Daddy.
Then why did you sell the papers?
I like to holler.
Now, that's fine. No wonder your throat hurts. Now, here, take a drink and go back to sleep.
Put the light on.
Well, what for?
I'm afraid to sleep in the dark.
Oh, nonsense. Everybody sleeps in the dark.
Why?
Because it's more restful. I always sleep in the dark.
Why?
Because the light bothers me.
What light?
The light in my bedroom.
Why don't you turn it off?
I never have it on.
Well, does it bother you?
Oh, leave me alone. I want to get some sleep. Good night.
Good night. Daddy!
What is it?
Tell me a story.
No, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I don't feel like telling stories.
Just a tiny lonely one.
All right. I'll tell you a quick one. It's about a boy named Algie and a bear.
Is it funny?
Oh, yes, it's very funny.
Me, Daddy.
A boy named Algie met a bear. The bear was Bulgy. The bulge was Algie. Good night. Well, what's the matter?
I don't like it.
Well, what do you want?
Tell me about Jack and the Beanstalk.
Well, I've told you that story a dozen times.
I want to hear it again.
All right. I'll tell you the story if you promise not to interrupt.
All right.
Once upon a time, there was a poor widow who had a son named Jack. They lived in a small...
Who lived?
Jack and his mother. Oh. They lived in a small village. Now, Jack's mother had always been very good to him, and he was...
Good to who, Daddy?
Good to Jack. She was...
Right? All... To who was?
His mother.
Whose mother?
Jack's mother!
Ah.
Now, don't you interrupt me. Jack's mother called him in one day and gave him a cow from the village. She told him...
Stole a cow?
No, told Jack.
Who told Jack?
His mother.
The cow is not it?
No, Jack told the cow to tell his mother. I mean his cow told the Jack. Stop mixing me up.
I didn't say nothing, Daddy.
Well, let me finish. Now, this poor widow...
What's a widow?
It's a woman whose husband went to heaven.
Why?
Because he died.
Does everybody go to heaven when they die?
No, only good people.
Well, I go there.
Yes, now this poor woman felt that...
When the doggy dies, will he go to heaven too?
I suppose so. Now, Jack's mother felt...
Do cats go to heaven, too?
Yes. Now...
Do cows go to heaven?
No!
Does everybody else go?
Yes.
And who goes for the milk?
Look, do you want to hear this story or not?
Uh-huh.
All right, then. Now, this poor widow... Well, look, what are you doing?
Better fall into pieces, Daddy. There's 2 big holes in the side.
Well, let me see. Wait till I turn on the light.
What's those holes, Daddy?
Don't fool around with that. They're just knot holes in the wood.
Huh?
I said they're knot holes.
They look like holes.
They are holes.
Well, why did you say they ain't?
I didn't say they're knot holes. I said they were knot holes. And when I say they're knot holes, I don't mean they're knot holes. I mean they're knot holes.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
No, I feel terrible. Now, I want to get some sleep.
You didn't finish your story.
Well, I'm not going to finish the story. Go ahead and yell, see if I care.
If you don't finish your story, I'll... Oh.
You what?
I'll go downstairs and break the big vase in the hall.
Snooks, that's a terrible thing to say. I really ought to thank you for that. But I know you don't mean it. Do you?
No, Daddy.
Well, that's better. I'm glad to see those behavior lessons I gave you are taking effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to bed now. And Snooks, even though I'm not going to finish the story, you have no wicked desire to go downstairs tonight and bake that vase, have you?
No, Daddy.
Why not?
Because I broke it this morning.
What? You little...
Now a word from Ted Pearson.
Do you know the amazing difference the new and improved Maxwell House makes? Do you know why thousands everywhere are now adopting this remarkable new coffee? Why you are now able to enjoy coffee that is marvelously clear, smoother, and richer? Well, as you know, it was over 50 years ago in Nashville, Tennessee, when Joel Cheek perfected the original secret Maxwell House blend for the Old South's most famous hotel. Well, since that time, millions have rated Maxwell House the perfect coffee. Now, if you had a coffee which pleased as many millions as Maxwell House, you'd think twice before trying to improve it, wouldn't you? Yet it was done after hundreds of tests. Under the direction of 12 coffee experts, a way was found to further enrich this famous blend. And now, no matter how good you thought the old, you will, we believe, marvel at the new Maxwell House. Not only will you find it richer, smoother, and more mellow, but you'll find a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup. The second improvement in the new Maxwell House is the famous radiant roast process, which, by roasting each bean all the way through, as evenly inside as out, brings out more of the true flavor of these choice coffees. Thus, no weak coffees and no chance of bitter coffee due to parching. But discover for yourself how marvelously clear, smooth, and rich the new Maxwell House really is. This new Maxwell House coffee comes in the same familiar blue can, the famous airtight super vacuum can, which keeps it not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. Remember, it's selling at low prices friendly to your budget. So tomorrow, ask your grocer for a pound. Now more than ever is the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Very sound, Ted. We continue now with another of Meredith Wilson's mad musical productions. This one is a potpourri of songs with the most nonsensical lyrics of the past decade or so. Meredith has tied the whole business into a package with a new song called This Is a Happy Little Ditty. Go ahead, Happy Little Ditty. Meredith, I've been thinking, if you will pardon the intrusion.
You've been thinking?
I've been thinking, and I've come to this conclusion. That the biggest hits of all, I mean that really were immense, are the silly little melodies with silly little harmonies and silly words that don't make any sense.
Well, can you prove it, Mr. Young?
I can prove it, Mr. Wilson.
Go ahead.
May I start?
Pray do.
Tippy, tippy, tin, tippy, tin, tippy, tippy, ton, tippy, ton.
Oh, yes.
We have no bananas.
We have no bananas today.
Flatfoot Flutie with a boy, boy.
Flatfoot Flutie with a boy, boy.
Flatfoot Flutie with a boy, boy. Floy, joy, floy, joy, floy, joy, floy. Beanie, 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 beanie,
truly, 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 truly time.
She said, are you truly, 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 truly mine?
Truly mine.
La, 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 la.
Hot and skin, hot and skin, a green and yellow mansion. And if I do not find it well,
I think that I shall die.
I must say, the music isn't pretty. I must say, the words are not so witty. But like this happy little ditty, you can sing them all day long.
Change, hey, it really doesn't matter. It's been a lot of silly chatter. Oh, hum, we're coming to the pattern.
Humpty Dumpty had a big fall, and thanks very much for the use of the hall.
I must say, the music isn't pretty.
Anyone can sing that song.
If you can sing it all day long.
Wow, that was very, very charming, Mary.
Well, you were good too, Bob.
Oh, thanks. Hello? All right. Frank Morgan, just a minute. Say, Mary, find Frank, will you?
Sure will, Bob.
Ralph, you all set?
Well, I found what I think is a fairly good disguise, Bob, as nearly as I can judge.
Yeah,
but after all, what I want...
Frank. Go get it. Go on. Hurry up.
Oh, Frank. Frank.
Hello, Todd. I mean, I'm Bob. Well.
Telephone, Senator.
Oh, thank you. Hello? Yes, sir. Attorneys. Yes. Well, you can't sue me for that. You haven't any grounds. And if you had, I'd beat you with a habeas corpus, nolle prosse, and nox vomica. Good day.
Why, are you getting sued, Senator?
Yes, certainly not. I was just following the universal political custom of kissing a few babies before election. I kissed one baby in Ventura, and look at the fuss.
Was that the baby's father?
No, it was her fiancé. This baby's 23.
Oh, well, that's fine. Frank, I want you to meet a very distinguished guest we have with us this evening.
Oh, yeah. Well, who is it?
Well, I'm not exactly... Would you mind
coming out here, please?
Oh.
Well, for him...
You'll be very much impressed with this gentleman.
Well...
Right this way, please.
What's that?
Frank, I have the honor to present the Office of Sulfa. This is Frank Morgan.
The Office of Sulfa? Well, how do you do, sir?
Ig poo.
Yes, sir. Now, don't betray your ignorance, Bob. The man is just speaking Hindustani.
That's right, Mr. Morgan. I said good evening.
Well, of course, I understood you. Are you staying here long, Hafiz?
Well...
No, Frank. The Hafiz is just passing through Los Angeles. He's on a concert tour. He plays the fiddle.
Oh, he does. Why, Hafiz, what a pleasure. It isn't often I meet a fellow violinist. Oh, how I love to relive my days as soloist with the Vienna Symphony.
Oh, now,
when
Frank,
I used to...
Frank!
What?
Are you trying to tell me, and the Hafiz here...
Yes?
...that you were a professional violinist, Mr. Morgan...
Sasha Morghini, Bob. Concertmeister under Schubert, Kapellmeister under Brahms, Mickey Meister under Disney.
Did you hear that, Hafiz?
Hafiz here, plenty.
All right. Listen, Sasha. So you were a concert violinist. Could you give me some idea what period of your career this was?
The period.
Was it around 1923, 25, 27?
Yes, it covered all those years.
I see.
Yes.
Hafiz, Mr. Morgan here says he was a concert soloist between the years of 1923 and 1927.
Igpoo?
Igpoo.
Where was your brother Ralph at that time, Frank?
Ralph. Hmm. Oh, yes. Well, it's very unfortunate. Now, just keep this to yourself, Bob, and you too, Hafiz. But Ralph had got into a rather nasty scrape at the time. We had to send him away on a trip. Oh, it was a ghastly affair, ghastly.
What happened to your brother, Ralph?
Well, yes, poor Ralph was always the black sheep of the family. A congenital liar. Light-fingered, too.
Well, you don't say.
Oh, yes, I fear. If you ever had such a brother, you'd know how I feel.
I've got one.
Oh, Igpoo.
Igpoo.
Your brother Ralph was a pickpocket, huh, Frank?
Yes, for 17 years, poor Ralph led a life of shame.
Then he reformed?
No, he got over being ashamed. I really appreciate it, gentlemen, if you'd never mention this to me again. Incidentally, it'd be a good thing if you didn't mention it to Ralph. Well, by the way, Hafiz, what kind of a violin do you play?
He plays a very high-class instrument, Frank. Brand new, very good-looking, I saw it.
Uh-huh. When do you start your tour, Hafiz?
He starts in London, the 23rd of November.
Young, I advise you to let this distinguished gentleman speak for himself.
It's his English, you half-wit.
Well, yours is nothing, too. Well, I mean, you can't. And besides, if the fellow said nothing but Igpoo all evening, he'd be more entertaining than you.
Well, thank you, Frank. Yes. The Hoffice is very intelligent, and I know he'd like to hear about your musical career.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Well, gentlemen, my career was probably the most brilliant of any virtuoso of our time. I played concerts in every civilized city of the globe. Yeah. I was idolized in London, lionized in Leipzig, and paralyzed in Paris. No, I've got to start looking at these things before I go on. I can't.
Keep fiddling, Nero.
Women wept as my strings sang in Copenhagen, Brussels, Vienna. But of all the appreciative audiences I ever played to, the one that gave me the greatest thrill was an audience at the Schauspiel in Hamburg.
What's that?
I said I'll take Hamburg.
Make mine cheese on rye.
Just coffee, please.
Cream and sugar?
Black.
Coming up. It was in Hamburg that I played my last concert. And, gentlemen, it made musical history because I was to present for the first time a Beethoven manuscript which I had discovered in my travels. A new violin concerto.
Was it good, Frank?
Oh, it was all right after I'd touched it up a little. I wrote a new andante, changed the counterpoint in the scherzo, and put a little zing into the finish. It's since become famous under the title A Tisket a Tasket.
Oh, yes. Beethoven's Tisket, Opus 32, sure.
Well, at any rate, as soon as the concert was scheduled, I plunged at once into rehearsals with the greatest symphony orchestra in Europe. And slaved night and day for 2 weeks to get the work in shape.
You must have been pretty tired.
So am I.
Well, have a seat, Iggy.
Thank you.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I was exhausted, Bob, and I went to my hotel room to get a little sleep. I'd barely been in bed for a half hour when destiny caught up with me.
The house detective.
Yes. No. The hotel was on fire. I quickly grabbed my precious violin and dashed from the inferno in my pajamas. I reached the theater and found the concert was already in progress. Only then did I realize that the only orchestration of this Beethoven concerto lay in ashes in room 512 of the Hamburg Commercial House.
What a spot. Pajamas and no music. Did you call the concert off?
Not Sasha Morghini. I borrowed a tailcoat, strode out on the stage in my pajama pants, and was instantly greeted with an ovation. As I plunged into my solo, the entire symphony orchestra, without a single note of music, performed a miracle. They accompanied me flawlessly.
Incredible.
Oh, yes. Within 3 minutes, every soul in the audience had forgotten my absurd costume in sheer delight at the magic music that was pouring from my bow. Then suddenly, as I was beginning the finale, it happened.
What?
A string broke, and instantly the house was in an uproar.
Why? Which string was it?
The string on my pajamas. Trying to struggle through the closing measures in this awkward situation, naturally, I fell down on my cadenza. I could never live that down, so I gave it up.
Frank, that's all the absolute truth, is it?
Every word.
All right, Frank. Shake hands with your brother, Ralph. Take off the spinach, Ralph.
Hello, Frank.
Well, Ralph, I'm delighted to see you.
I can imagine, but we'll let that go. Ralph, I'd just like to know if there was any truth whatsoever in this story Frank just told.
Well...
Now, do me a favor and be brief, will you, Ralph?
I'll be brief, Bob. The whole story is true.
What?
true. Ralph, how can you possibly say that?
Well, Bob, I ought to know. Who do you think led that orchestra? Come on, Fran, let's get some chicken.
Well, good old Ralph.
Bob, I've just received a poem from Bob Loving, a reporter on the Bristol, Virginia Herald Courier.
Well, why don't you read it, Ted?
Okay, Bob, here goes. You may speak of blooming flowers, of inspiration rare. You may tell of words and powers to drive away all care. But a thought that most appeals to me, a sweet exotic dream, is a cup of Maxwell House coffee with a little bit of cream.
Why, that's almost perfect.
Almost? Why?
Well, the only thing he didn't include is our Maxwell House moment of relaxation and Meredith's music. Now, folks, it's time for that pleasant custom of ours, so won't you join us in the steaming cup of Maxwell House?
We now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
This is Bob Young again, and we continue our Good News Maxwell House program with Fanny Bryce, Frank and Ralph Morgan, Meredith Wilson, and Betty Janes and Douglas McPhail. Betty and Doug open our second act with a duet. You'll hear them sing together in MGM's new production of Victor Herbert's Sweethearts, the title song from this famous operetta, and another favorite from the same show, Wooden Shoes.
Famed for frivolity,
a sprightly cookie
who lived just for jollity,
had plenty of suitors, had only two shoes, and being a Dutch girl, she wore wooden shoes. When she stole out at night, all the town knew the news, when they heard the pit-patter of her wooden shoes. Then the lads half asleep, oh, how jealous they'd get. And they'd say to themselves, who is out with Janet? Slip, clop, clop, clip, clop, clop, over the tiles. Her feet were petite, but you heard them for miles. With her pitter, pitter, patter, clip, clop, clop, on if her shoes.
Like so.
We continue our Maxwell House program as Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's producer-director, Mr. Edgar Selwyn, presents in the MGM Theater of the Air a dramatic one-act play by Holworthy Hall and Robert Middlemass, The Valiant, with Ralph Morgan, Ruth Hussey, and Robert Young. The Valiant is the story of a man condemned to death. Throughout his trial, he's given his name as James Dyke, and no one has been able to learn his true identity. Our scene is the warden's office in the penitentiary. The warden, Ralph Morgan, has sent for Dyke, Robert Young, in a last-minute effort to find out who he really is.
Dyke, you've only got about 20 minutes more to live.
Well, I told you why I killed Brennan. I killed him because he wasn't fit to live. I told the judge and the jury the same thing. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm rather proud of it.
Well, let that go. What I don't understand is how you happen to get mixed up with a man like that.
That's the part I'm not so proud of.
I see. You haven't changed your mind about telling me your real name.
No, sir.
Why not, Dyke?
Well, put yourself in my place. You have friends, relatives. Your mother living?
She is, thank heaven.
I don't even know whether mine is or not. But if she is, do you think it would make her happy to know her son died paying a debt to the state?
I'm afraid not.
Well, that's the reason I'm James Dyke tonight, Warden. So long since I've been home that there's not much danger. But if I told you my name, even in confidence, I wouldn't feel comfortable. Comfortable. That's a strange word to use in circumstances, isn't it?
Yes. Well, my boy, is there anything I can do for you?
No, thanks.
I'm sorry. Suppose you rest in your cell for a moment. And then I'll send for the Father Daly in. He'll see you.
Yes.
Yes, Warden?
Take Dyke to his cell, please.
Yes, sir.
Goodbye, Dyke.
Goodbye.
The warden's office. This is the warden speaking. Who? Well, that won't do any good. He won't talk. Our brother? Well, I just had him in here, and that's just what he doesn't want. What? Oh, all right. Send her in. I'll talk to her. 11:45 now. Pretty late for anything like this. Come in. Hello, miss. You've come to see James Dyke.
Yes, sir.
Come in and sit down, please.
Yes, sir.
How long is it since you've seen your brother?
I haven't seen him since I was a little girl.
How do you think you're going to recognize him? Suppose he doesn't want to be recognized by you or anybody else.
I'd thought of that. I'm just going to talk to him, ask him questions about things he and I used to do together. And I'll watch his face. If he's my brother, I'm sure I can tell.
What did you and your brother ever used to do together that would help you now?
He used to play games with me when I was a little girl and tell me stories. That's what I'm counting on mostly, the stories.
Well, I'm afraid...
Especially Shakespeare stories.
Shakespeare?
Well, yes. He used to get the plots of the plays, all the Shakespeare plays. And then he'd tell me the stories in his own words. Oh, it was wonderful.
Well, I'm certainly afraid he...
But best of all, he'd learn some of the speeches from the plays themselves. He liked to do it. He was sure he was going to be an actor.
Oh, I see.
And every night he'd sit on the side of my bed. And when I got sleepy, there were two speeches we'd always say to each other. Two speeches out of Romeo and Juliet. And then I'd go to sleep. I used to say, good night, good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow. And then he'd say, sleep, dwell upon thine eyes, peace in thy breast. Would I were sleep and peace, so sweet to rest.
That's Shakespeare, huh?
Yes. If he knows those lines, he's my brother.
Well, you never can be sure. I'll tell you, miss. I'll let you see for yourself. Only you might as well be prepared.
Yes, sir?
Bring Dyke in, please. I'll get him in here, and then I think I can safely leave you together.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mother sent me to see you.
Yeah?
You see, we haven't seen nor heard my brother Joe for ever so long, and Mother thought, after we'd read in the papers...
That I might be your brother Joe.
Yes, that's it.
Well, you can see that I'm not, can't you?
I'm not sure. You look a little like him, just as the picture in the paper did. But then again, it's been so long, and I thought of Joe so...
Well, little. I couldn't be your brother, anybody else's brother, because I never had a sister. So I guess that's settled.
Honestly?
You don't think I'm going to tell a lie at this stage of the game, do you?
No, I don't believe you would. Did you ever want to be an actor, or were you ever?
No, never.
Do you know any poetry?
Poetry?
Yes. Thou knowest the mask of night is on my face, else would a maiden blush but paint my cheek for that which... Well, don't you know what that is?
No, but it sounds sort of silly to me. Doesn't it to you?
Oh, no. Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow.
Well?
What comes next?
I don't know.
No. Now, you're not Joe, are you? I had to come and find out, though. I hope I haven't made you too unhappy.
You going?
Yes, I promised it. Is it the warden, that man in there?
Yeah.
Well, I said I'd go right away if you weren't my brother and you aren't, so...
So you're going back to your mother?
Yes.
I'm surprised that she sent a girl like you on such an errand as this, instead of coming herself.
She's very ill.
Oh. That's too bad. Well, when you tell her that her son isn't a murderer, at least not this one, that'll make her feel better, won't it?
Yes, I think maybe it will. Only
what?
Only I don't think Mother'll ever be really well again until she finds out for certain where Joe is and what's become of him.
A mother shouldn't be treated like that. I wish I'd treated mine better. By the way, you didn't tell me what your name is.
Josephine Paris.
Your brother's name was Joseph?
Yes. Yes, they used to call us Joe and Josie. That's funny, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's so very funny. I sort of like it. Hey.
What's the matter?
I was trying to think of something. Oh, what was that guy's name? Wait a minute, don't tell me. Wait a minute. I've got it. Joseph Anthony Paris.
Why, that's his name. That's Joe. How did you ever...
Wait. Listen carefully to what I say and don't interrupt me. We only got a minute and I want you to get this straight so you can tell your mother. When the war came along and... I want you to get this straight so you can tell your mother. When the war came along, I enlisted and was overseas for 4 years with the Canadians. Early one morning, we'd staged a big trench raid. And there was an officer who'd been wounded coming back, lying out there between the lines under fire. Well, all of a sudden, a young fellow dashed out of a trench not far from where I was and went for that officer. The chances were about 1,000,000 to 1 against him. And he must have known it, but he went out just the same. He got the officer in his arms and started back, but he'd only gone a few yards when a shell landed right on top of the two of them. Afterward, we got the identification tag, and that was the name. Joseph Anthony Paris.
Oh.
If that was your brother's name, you can tell your mother that he died like a brave man and a soldier.
Joe? My brother Joe? Dead? And you were there?
I was there and saw it. It ought to make your mother happy to know her boy died as a soldier and not as a criminal.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Does it make you happy, too?
Yes. So happy. After what we were both afraid of. Yet I'm sorry for you. So truly sorry. I wish I could only do something to make you a tiny bit happier, too. Is there anything I could do?
Yes, there is.
What is it?
I can't tell you. I shouldn't even have let myself think of
it. No, please tell me. I want you to, for Joe's sake. Tell me what I can do.
Well, in all the months I've been in this hideous place, you're the first girl I've seen. I've been terribly lonesome tonight. And if you really want to do something for me, for your brother's sake, you see, you're going to leave me in just a minute, and I haven't any sister of my own or anybody else to say goodbye to me. So if you could really say goodbye, if you could kiss me goodbye, would you?
Yes.
God bless you. Goodbye, my dear.
Good night. Goodbye.
What is it?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I was thinking what I used to say to my brother for goodnight. And if only I could have said it for him just once more. For goodbye.
What was it?
I told it to you before, and you said it was silly.
Say it again.
Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow. Goodbye.
Sleep dwell upon thine eyes, peace in thy breast. Would I were sleep and peace, so sweet to rest.
Come, my boy.
Is it time, Father?
Yes, it's time.
Listen, Father. Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant never taste of death but once.
Dyke, it's time now. Time to go.
My son.
All right. Let's go. Walk with me, Father.
I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help.
How to Win Friends and Influence People. Since Bob Young and Alan Jones took over the management of the Bel Air Stables, they've gotten most of us here on the Good News Show interested in horseback riding. We thought you might like to know a horse's viewpoint of our gang, so we've hooked up our special horse-a-ma-phone in the stables, and as we pick them up, Bob Young's horse is talking to Frank Morgan's horse.
Well, shot my hook, if it isn't my old stablemate, Stagehand.
Of course, and braid my tail if it isn't Sparkplug Young. How's the old fire horse? Whee! Yourself.
Why, stagehand, I haven't seen you since you and Brooklyn were claimed at Santa Anita. What have you been doing lately?
Oh! I've just been horsing around.
Say, you're getting awfully skinny. Your ribs are showing through. If you get any more sway back, you'll have to trade in your saddle for a girdle.
What do you expect with an owner like that tightwad Frank Morgan? Did you ever hear of a horse gaining weight on empty beer bottles?
Well, speaking of food reminds me, I haven't had a bit in my mouth all day.
Me either. I'm starving. I'm so hungry I could eat a horse.
Well, I'm just getting ready to put on the feed bag. Will you take potluck?
Yes, I'll be delighted.
Crunch.
Mm. Oh, this
hey, what
is
are you
good.
Putting your hoof in the feed bag?
Oh, I'm just feeling my oats. Wow.
Say, look who's trotting over here. Meredith Wilson's Shetland pony, Bushy Boy.
Hello there.
Well, what are you doing? Giving us the horse laugh?
No. I just heard a story about a Scotch polo team.
Scotch polo team?
Yes. Three men on a horse.
Any news yet on the house law?
Yep, they just passed it. From now on, 30 bales of hay every Thursday.
By the way, do you know Sparkplug Young here?
Certainly. We both have the same veterinary.
Well, for heaven's sake, don't start talking about your operation.
Oh, by the way, Bushy Boy, how's your sister? I haven't seen the little filly since she was a pony in the front line at the horse opera.
Oh, she's married now, living at the Gardenia Livery Stables in Detroit. She's a mudder. Just had a blessed event.
Oh, a colt in Detroit. Whee!
Oh. Say, oh, Dan my. Morgan, it's those kind of jokes that make a horse sound like a jackass.
Hey, here comes Fanny Bryce's horse, Sea Blintzes. You better hide that feed bag.
Hello, boya. It's all right. You don't have to hide the feed bag. I couldn't eat that thing. You're looking at a horse that kicks like a dog.
What's the matter? Too much rye, corn, and song?
No, but I think somebody put a Mickey thing in my oats. Oi.
Well, you certainly must have felt all right when you raced War Admiral the other day.
Yeah, but today I couldn't be the Admiral, even if he was just a plain sailor.
Hey, Sea Blintzes, whatever happened to that little blonde mare that used to pasture with you?
Yes, remember? She was double-gated, had a beautiful flank, and as prim an ankle as ever kicked up the turf at Narragansett. Whee!
You mean sleep a lot? Well, she went swing crazy.
Swing crazy? How could a horse go swing crazy?
Well, she became a dray horse, and now she's trucking.
Well, say, swing ain't a bad idea. What do you say to a little stable jam session?
I'll sing bass. I'm a little hoarse anyway.
Okay, let's go all together now.
Well,
the old gray mare, she ain't what...
She ain't what... High horse, silver boy!
Now, Ted Pearson.
You know, of course, about the two amazing developments recently made in Maxwell House coffee. How after 8 months' work, both the blend and the roasting method have been improved. Well, you should see the letters we get about it. Take the one from Mrs. John T. Donovan of 30 Burke Avenue, Towson, Maryland. Here's what she writes. Just a few lines to tell you that for the past 5 years, I've been a consistent user of Maxwell House coffee. And it's never failed to live up to your slogan, good to the last drop. I might add that if such a thing is possible, your new process of blending and roasting has made this delicious coffee taste better than ever before. Please accept our thanks for such a grand product at a moderate price, and also our sincere appreciation of the fine radio program you present every Thursday night. Unquote. Well, each week we get more and more letters from our thousands of friends who are discovering even greater pleasure drinking this new Maxwell House. Today, people who believed improvement of Joel Cheek's original secret blend impossible, marvel at this even richer, even smoother, even mellower new Maxwell House. Then, too, it has more flavor due to the radiant roast process, which roasts each bean evenly all the way through, thus brings more of the flavor out, and there's no bitter coffee due to parching. But discover for yourself how marvelously clear, smooth, and rich it is. How much more flavor, how much more cheery stimulation there is in the new Maxwell House. Serve it to your husband and family tomorrow. Then, see if they don't agree that now more than ever, it's the coffee that's good to the last drop.
For his concert hall presentation this evening, Meredith Wilson continues his experiment in public participation. You remember the question. If all the music in the world had been destroyed, and you could choose just one composition to hear again and preserve, what would you choose? Tonight's selection was made in answer to this question by Mr. Grover Whalen, managing director of the World's Fair in New York. And the composition Mr. Whalen has chosen is the famous and always popular Londonderry Air. Meredith presents it for us now. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, a gala Good News Maxwell House program inaugurating our second year on the air. An all-star show next week. Star number one,
One of the most likable young men in Hollywood, George Murphy.
Star number two.
Maureen O'Sullivan.
Star number three.
Lou Ayres.
And star number four.
Lionel Barrymore in one of his greatest dramatic triumphs.
All this in addition to our regular gang, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, Douglas McPhail and yours truly.
Good news for Providence, Rhode Island. Our own Freddie Bartholomew appears in person at your Lowe's Theater in Providence the week beginning tomorrow, November 4th.
This is Bob Young saying good night until next Thursday. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. Don't miss MGM's thrilling romantic musical drama, The Great Waltz.
This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is KFI Los Angeles.